This Is Your Life, Season 1, Episode 7. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. I'm sitting in the studio today with the one, the only, Michael Hyatt. Welcome, Michael.
Hey, Michelle. Good to be with you again.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty good.
It's a good day, isn't it? I mean, what's better than sitting in the studio and just having a conversation?
Yeah, I have no idea what the weather's doing outside, but it was raining kind of when I came in, or at least threatening to.
Oh, but it's sunny in here.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Well, have you ever found yourself stretched too thin? Have you ever felt both overworked and underutilized? Do you ever feel busy but not productive? These are the questions that Greg McKeown asks in his new book, Essentialism. And if you answered yes to any of these, or maybe if you're like me, you answered yes to all of them.
Exactly. Yeah.
Today's podcast is for you. So we're going to start with you. Have you ever felt overworked, underutilized, stretched too thin, busy but not productive? Please say yes.
Yes, absolutely. I feel like this is like the continual struggle of my life. You know, I learned a long time ago that if you want to know what people struggle with, particularly authors and speakers, just see what they talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk a lot about this because I struggle a lot with it. I don't know what it is, but I tend to take on more than I should. I have a hard time saying no. I confessed on the last episode and many episodes before that I'm a recovering people pleaser. So it's just difficult. I find myself there a lot. And
Hold on.
I think I'm getting better.
What's a lot? So, I mean, I don't know that there's many days that I don't feel overwhelmed to some degree. Because, you know, I have lots of kids and responsibilities and working full time. So when you say a lot, what is a lot?
Well, I wouldn't say it's once a day, but I would say at least it's once a week.
Okay.
You know, and I think it used to really kind of freak me out, like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Now I just kind of recognize that I don't want to call it a familiar friend, but it kind of shows up and I go, oh yeah, that thing, you know? And so now I have some strategies for dealing with it, but it's frequent. And everybody I know feels the same way. I was listening to a podcast recently. No, it was Brené Brown's book again,
okay.
The Workshop. I'll get it right here in a second. But she talked about exhaustion as the new status symbol.
Oh, so true.
And see, I think there's kind of like two things going on. There's a real sense of being overwhelmed, but there's that sense that if we don't feel overwhelmed, we must not be doing something important. And
or
so,
maybe that we're lazy.
I mean, or
that's
maybe, yes.
An interesting thought too. Well, if we're not busy, we must be lazy.
Yeah, exactly. And I grew up in a family where that was like the thing that you absolutely didn't want to be accused of or be guilty of was being lazy. So you had to be busy all the time. And I don't know about you when you started out in the workplace, but when I started out, you know, jobs as a high school student, you know, the boss always told me, you know, there's no downtime.
Mm-hmm.
If there's not customers, find something to clean, find something to fix. You should always be busy. And I've kind of carried that over into life. And I think that's most of my overwhelmed feelings are self-inflicted because I can't blame anybody now that I'm an entrepreneur. I don't have a boss.
But there's this kind of drive that hard work is the only, that's what equates with value. Personal value,
right.
And significance is you have to work hard. And how we define that working hard is if I'm not exhausted, then I'm not working hard enough. So I need to be completely spent at the end of each day or I'm not doing enough.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, think about the conversations you have with people. You know, how you doing? Oh, crazy busy. Mm-hmm. Or I'm just overwhelmed or whatever. And that's where I think Brené makes the point that's really valid. And that is people are doing it for some other reason. Then they can't say no. They're getting they're deriving a sense of significance or a sense of importance out of it. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, if we look in the mirror, we say, there's some part of this that feeds something. There's some mm-hmm. need that we have that it's hard to walk away from this. And that's where addictions happen also, is that when it meets some need, even though it's not healthy, and this meets some need we have for significance.
So you just mentioned addictions and other fallout from that. That's what I want to ask you. So you felt overwhelmed and you've been in this place before. What has been the fallout? You know, if you can be really transparent with us, a little open about this, what's been the fallout for you when you get to that place? Where do you notice it?
See, like, this is like the exact reason I brought you on the show as a co-host, but it's also the thing I fear because now I got to dig deeper. So ask that question again.
So what has been like the symptoms or the fallout, kind of the where you see that it has kind of had a negative impact on your life when you get to that place?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. I mean, first of all, I didn't always make my family first. Mm. And I think I convinced myself that my circumstances were temporary. And unfortunately, they were permanent oftentimes. But I think that was a lie that I told myself. It was like, okay, I just started a new job. So if I can just, you know, get acclimated to the new job, then things will settle down and I'll have more time for the family. Or, oh my gosh, we just had a new baby and this is a really stressful time if we can just get through this period. Or we just moved to a new house or I just took a new job or whatever it is. And so for me, it was just working constantly and not being able to turn it off and dragging it home with me. And so that was a very unhealthy way. And I'll tell you, I made a huge change probably about 10 years ago, but prior to that, it really affected my health too, because I never got really overweight, but I wasn't exercising and I definitely was feeling lethargic. I was paying for it with my health. I had a couple serious health scares where I ended up in the emergency room thinking I was having a heart attack. And I mean, this went on literally for about a year and a half. I think I ended up in the emergency room 4 times. And every time I thought I was having a heart attack and they would check me out. One time happened in New York City. I was having dinner with a friend in Manhattan and I felt that sort of awkward sensation of this, like I might be having a heart attack, you know, my arm's going numb and I'm feeling the pain in my chest and we're having a conversation. And so then I'm thinking to myself, maybe if I don't think about this, it'll go away because I don't want to interrupt the conversation. This is going to be embarrassing. And so I finally said to my friend, I said, David, I think I'm having a heart attack. And I mean, like he just immediately, you know, waiter and got our check and rushed me off to St. Vincent's Hospital in Manhattan. And they brought me in, kept me overnight, did all the tests and said, you know, we're not sure what's going on, but it's not a heart attack. It's not your heart.
Wow. That's a wake up call.
Yeah. And so I came back to Nashville and John Maxwell actually had a heart attack and I knew he had a surgeon or a cardiologist in Nashville that had saved his life. And so I called his assistant, Linda, and I said, give me the name of the cardiologist. He did. I went in and saw that cardiologist, and he said, well, tell me what's going on in your life.
That's a smart doctor.
I know. I was like, okay, you're a doctor. What does that have to do with anything? We're talking about my body. No, he said, you know, my guess is that this is probably stress. He said about a third of all the patients that come to me who think they're having a heart attack aren't.
Oh, that's interesting.
And he did a bunch of tests, you know, all the EKG stuff and all that. And he said, the issue is that you have acid reflux. And so you need to make some changes in your diet. I'm going to give you some medication, but you've got to start exercising regularly. So, yeah.
So this whole idea of being overwhelmed and we work so hard thinking that that's actually productive and it's actually counterproductive, which is so interesting. Recently, you and I both started reading this book called Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less by Greg McKeown. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. Greg, if I'm not, forgive me.
We did look it up on the internet.
We did try to look it up.
At pronouncenames.com. So.
Yeah, so it should be right. And if it's not right, Greg, you need to change the pronunciation of your name. Oh, no. Is he going to email
really
me? But this book is really revolutionary. It's fabulous. There's so much great content within the pages of these books. Every page, every chapter, it's really speaking to me. I think he wrote it just for me. But now after listening to you talk, maybe he wrote it for both of us.
I think he did. I mean, when I read the book, I tweeted out and then I ended up doing a review on my blog. But I said, this is probably the best book I've read in 5 years. And that's saying a lot. I don't say that lightly.
Yeah, and it's true. And I do the same. I'm a tough audience when it comes to books, but this one I'm completely captivated by because it's really addressing something in our culture that we have blindly accepted and followed along with, and it's to our detriment. It's killing us.
Yeah, I mean, and he talks about this myth. And when he said this, I knew I was on the right book. But he says that we've all kind of bought into the myth that we can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can have it all. You know, you can be a stay-at-home mom at the same time working a full-time job, be married, have a great marriage, have an awesome career, pursue all your hobbies, be in great shape. You can have it all. And it's really a lie. And one of the key things he talks about in the book is that life is a trade-off. You know, you
totally.
And I heard somebody else say this, and I don't know who it was. I'm going to take credit for it till they show up and claim it. But you can do everything you want, but you can do anything you want. Or to reverse it, I think the way it goes, anything. You can do anything you want, you just can't do everything you want.
Which is so true. But every day, whether we're watching TV or online or just even out in the public, the message is contrary to that. It's opposite.
It is.
And so we keep pushing ourselves to do more, to be more, to tackle it all. And then when we fall short, we feel guilty and shame about it and all that kind of just garbage. And so there's this vicious circle of always trying to do it all. And it's impossible. We can't.
And the mass media reinforces this because all you have to do is stand in the line at the grocery store. And you see these magazines with these beautiful people with amazing families, and they're achieving all this stuff and making all this money, and they got all these possessions. And so you compare yourself. Or you go on Facebook.
Oh.
And, I mean, that's like the ultimate, you know, vehicle of shame. Because you see all your friends who have these amazing lives and hot spouses and all this stuff. And I don't know what it is, but most people position themselves on social media to tell you about all the stuff that's working, but not the stuff that's not working.
But we see it as being the whole story. We're
That's
not
right.
seeing the whole story, but we view it and we take it in as if it is. And so then we think we have to do the same.
Yep. And well, one of two things happens. Either you think your life sucks and there's no way you can keep up and you just feel guilty and shamed, or you just redouble your efforts. And that's where we really get into the trouble.
So Greg McKeown, in his book, he actually equates us to the idea of cleaning out a closet. So you and I have a closet in the master bedroom. You have a closet. You and Gail do. My husband and I have a master closet in the bedroom. And we fill it with clothes and shoes and whatever. I don't know. I have lots of things that probably shouldn't be in my closet.
Yeah, I do too. More than I should.
But if we keep adding things to it without cleaning it out, at some point, it's going to be full. It's going to be absolute chaos. It's going to be a mess. And he talks about the fact that we understand this about our closet. And so periodically, we'll go through and clean it out, right? And
yeah.
Donate things, get rid of things. But we don't do that with our life.
No. And the worst part about the closet, just to press it a little bit further, and he does this in the book, it's not just that you and I are accumulating stuff that's going in our closet, but our friends are showing up with their clothes and putting them in their closet.
Yes.
So they're asking us to do stuff, make commitments, assignments from church, extra work at work, more stuff with our kids, carting them around to every kind of sporting event or hobby or whatever. And so the closet gets jammed.
Yeah, we feel a need to accommodate all these things coming in, and it's just not even realistic. And so I love how he has us view this kind of closet of our life because it has limited borders, boundaries,
yes,
a limited space, and we have to operate within that.
Yep.
So let's kind of unpack the framework of his book a little bit.
Okay.
The basic value proposition that he says in his book, actually, it's right on page 4. This is the value proposition of essentialism. Only once you give yourself permission to stop trying to do it all, to stop saying yes to everyone, can you make your highest contribution toward the things that really matter.
This is so important, Michelle. Because I do think it's difficult for most of us to give ourselves permission. But to realize that this is a fool's errand. This is the great myth of our time, to think that we can do it all and to put ourselves and our families on this kind of treadmill where we exhaust them, we exhaust ourselves, and we were not meant to live with this kind of stress, and something's going to break. And it's broken families, it's broken health. Something is going to bust. You cannot do it all, and therefore you have to choose. And that's the whole point of the book.
And it's better to choose sooner than later.
That's
right. Don't wait for something to happen to make that choice. I mean, you and I can do this right now, which is really the heart of your podcast, that, you know, do what matters. Make a choice. Your life is a gift. Choose.
And be intentional. I'm sorry.
Be intentional.
But like, I have a friend at church who just went through a heart attack. And he admitted to me after he did it. He said, you know, I haven't exercised in years. I don't care what I eat. I eat all kinds of stuff. And now he's being forced to get on an exercise regimen, to learn about food, which he'd never done before, to consider what he's putting into his mouth, which is something he'd never done before. And it's kind of like you were saying, you either choose to do this stuff on this side of the crisis, or you will experience a crisis and you will decide. So my philosophy is panic now and do it later. I mean, you'll, instead of doing it later, go ahead and do the hard thing now, because a sort of a self-inflicted crisis, so to speak, it's not really a crisis, but doing these things self-inflicted is much better than a total breakdown later.
Absolutely. He mentions the idea of the highest contribution, that our goal is not to do everything, but to kind of identify where our areas of highest contribution are. So can you explain that a little bit for those that haven't necessarily read the book, kind of help them understand what he's going for here?
Yeah, you know, we can't do everything well. We can't do everything great. There's only a few things that we can do that really move the needle, that add value, that make a contribution. And for all of us, we have to decide what those things are. So, for example, I was having a conversation with Gail about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, and, you know, she felt like, as a mom and as a stay-at-home mom, you know, she doesn't work outside the home, and with 5 daughters, she's, I mean, that's like a full-time job, right? And she thought she ought to be able to clean the house. And I said to her one day, I said, but that's not your highest and best contribution. There are other people that could make money doing that, who are particularly gifted at that. That may be their highest contribution, but that's not yours. You know, and I didn't want to say this, and if she's listening, forgive me, honey, but you know, you're not particularly good at it. You know, this isn't your strength. What you really are good at is you're great at relationships. You're great at creativity. You're great at positivity and encouraging people. She's the best encourager I know. So how do we make space for more of that in your life? So I said, I want us to hire a housekeeper to help with that. Now I realize not everybody can do that, but I'm trying to demonstrate a principle. I wanted to free her up to do what she does best. Mm-hmm. But here was the key for her. When she realized that if she didn't do that, she was really taking away work from somebody else who found meaning in that work and was much better at it.
So she could be freed up to make her investment in her area of highest contribution.
Yep.
By the way, for those of you women out there that would like to have a housekeeper and need someone to help convince the other people in the household that needs to happen, Michael is available to make a personal phone call to all of you.
Well, some of those things are worth...
But that's a great story. I mean, that really is. That's just a perfect example of how, regardless of where your business is or your leadership is, we all have to make these choices. It's not just the CEOs that have to choose where they invest and where their area of greatest contribution is, but all of us.
Well, and just, I can hear this objection almost in my ears audibly with people saying, yeah, but that's fine for you to say because you've got the money to afford that. Now, I just want to say this. This is so important. The resources will not show up until you've identified the need. I've experienced that time and time again in my business. And the people that say, I can't think about that because I can't afford it, are the people that say stuck. And so if you're thinking that right now, I just want to challenge your thinking, because the way to think about it is this. If I had the money, what's the first thing I would offload? And then to begin to think about that, get more definition, more clarity about it. Because as you do that, the resources have a way, at least in my experience, of showing up. It may be months, it may be years. But if you're not clear what you want, don't expect the resources just to show up and park at your doorstep and say, okay, here I am, if you ever get the clarity on this.
And really, you know, the point here is not about the housekeeper, not a housekeeper, you know, whether you should get that or not. I mean, the entire point here is that we all have a responsibility, or we all have the option to choose. I think we forget that we have a choice.
Yes.
You know,
very
we
important.
Get stuck in this kind of this hamster wheel of busyness and chaos and always trying to achieve more, and we forget that we have the option, and it's time that we exercise that option for the sake of our health and our productivity and our families and everything else. And that's what Greg McKeown's all about.
Well, that's right. And I think just to own that even a little bit more, to realize that the life we have right now at this moment, whatever it is, good, bad, ugly, whatever it is the result of the decisions that you've made in the past. Now, I realize that bad things happen that we don't choose. But how we respond to those bad things is our choice. And so the psychological frame of mind, or the mindset that we have right now, is a result of those choices that we've made. And we can choose differently.
Yes. And that's really the hope of all of this, is the fact that even if you've made years of bad decisions that got you into a hole. So let's say there's somebody listening that is emotionally bankrupt, physically bankrupt, relationally bankrupt, and they've pushed themselves so hard that they're really in a deficit. You can change it today.
You can.
And that's really the offering that Greg offers through his book, Essentialism, is that he gives you a process for being able to do that. And that's what we're going to unpack next.
Yes.
So it really begins with the first step in this process of becoming an essentialist is to explore.
Yeah.
Which is all about looking at all the different places where we are pouring ourselves out, where we're invested, and discerning what he calls discerning the trivial many from the vital few.
Yeah.
Okay, explain that.
Well, as it turns out, most of what we do in life is trivial. You know, there's only a few things that we do that really matter, and we take on all this stuff that at the end of the day is not going to matter. We're not going to remember it five years
from now.
Give
an example, because I know there's people listening right now that are saying, no, I really have already done that. Everything that I'm doing is critical.
I'll give you an example.
Look at your life. I mean, you have multiple different tasks. What are some things that over even the last 6 months or 12 months that you identified as trivial and you decided no more?
Yeah, and it's not that they're not trivial or that they're significant. They might be significant to somebody else, but they're trivial to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, exactly. One of the things I've had to let go that's a good example that we're sitting here today is that I don't have to create the show prep for every podcast. It's not that that's not important. It's critically important. But for me, it's trivial. And I was spending a ton of time.
It's not your area of greatest contribution.
It's not my area of greatest contribution. For me, trying to do my own expense reports, you know, again, I know there are people out there that are shaking their head going, well, that's a great luxury. But I'm just saying there are things that you're doing in your life right now. And what Greg invites us to do is to identify those things that are trivial and to explore, and that's really the first step, to explore what life could be like if it were different, if we made different choices, if we identified the trivial from the significant and began to focus on our areas of highest contribution.
And you kind of said this already, but that's really going to be unique to each person because we're all
totally
talented, you know, have different talents, different wirings.
Season of life.
And so, you know, what is trivial, like you said, trivial to you might be my area of greatest contribution and vice versa. So this is really a personal thing. This is not a
good or bad.
One answer fits all kind of thing. So you have to, you know, you and I and the listeners here have to figure out what is trivial for us.
And my real takeaway in this first section too, by the way, or this first step was that you got to slow down the process and really evaluate so that when the incoming stuff comes, when the requests come for your time, when another demand shows up and says, hey, I need you to do this. Somebody at church asks you to do this. Somebody at work asks you to do something extra. The non-essentialist is the person who responds quickly and just says, oh yeah, I can probably do that.
Hmm.
And then they get overcommitted because it goes from one commitment to another commitment. Pretty soon you're careening down the highway overcommitted. But what he says is know that the essentialist explores all those options and considers them, but pushes, and I don't, Dr. Covey uses this example, but pushes the pause button and puts some distance between the stimulus and the response. So you've got time to think through it and say, wait a second. Okay, they're asking me if I can commit to this committee or this board assignment or whatever. I want to see that in the context of my calendar. I want to talk to the people that love me most and love me best. And I want to get their perspective before I say yes. So I'm going to explore all this. And I just recently went through this process in a new board that I was invited to be a part of. And I ended up saying yes. But I took several weeks to go through the process because I didn't want to be guilty of 6 months from now, waking up and going, what was I thinking? Which so often happens with commitments.
Really? I don't know. I've never experienced that, ever. Well, some questions that you can ask yourself to help explore your areas of greatest contribution include these. So if you're sitting at home or you're at your office, wherever, you know, you can write these down. We'll also make sure that it's included in the show notes. Or even better, why don't you just buy the book? Because you really need this. So some questions you can ask to help you kind of narrow in on this. First of all, what do I feel deeply inspired by? Such a great question. Mm-hmm. So what deeply inspires me? What am I particularly talented at, which we've mentioned briefly here? And what meets a significant need in the world? And those three questions are really a great framework for you to be able to explore this.
Great framework. I've used that same framework in other contexts. As you know, I do that speech at the Launch Conference where I talk about this, finding your calling.
Okay, so that's the first step is to explore. And then this is where I think the exploring is the easy part. And then he takes us to step two, which is eliminate. And this is where we really, really wrestle because when we have to eliminate something, we become very attached to it. And eliminating is basically cutting out the trivial many. So once we've identified the trivial that we need to cut out in order to make our greatest contribution, then we need to cut it out and eliminate it. And he said that what is so difficult about this particular step is that social expectations are going to always be pushing us otherwise.
Right.
So this culture that we live in, this kind of social expectations that are with us from the moment we wake up till we go to bed, and some of us dream about it at night as well, will always be pushing against us to do the opposite of what we know we need to do. So how do you deal with that? How do you deal with the constant expectations of this culture?
And that's exactly right. I think just to press it a little bit further, I think the concern that we have is that when we say no, we're going to disappoint somebody. And it's that disappointment or the prospect of disappointment that keeps us from saying no when we really know that we should say no. But it's oftentimes just something that's in our mind. And I'll give you a real concrete example just recently. So I have two of my daughters who are very successful, and they're involved in a multi-level business, and they've done terrific at it. And they really wanted Gail involved. And Gail loves to do things with other people, and she, like me, we both have a hard time saying no. And so she just got to the place where she's pursuing her art, and now painting is a huge priority for me, and she's doing a phenomenal job. And so it was going to require
her. She's so good at it.
She is really
great.
I
mean, she's so good at it.
So she was going to have to say no to the girls. And so she was really fretting about this, and we talked about some talking points and how she could have this conversation. And so one night, a couple of the girls were over, and they were talking about this, and I just blurted out. I forgot that we had a plan that she was going to go through the talking points and all that, and I just was kind of impulsive, and I said, you know, Mom doesn't really want to do this. and I said, here's why. I mean, she's trying to pursue her art. And both the girls said, I mean, without missing a beat, they said, well, we wondered when she was going to say that. And they were like, that's fine. No problem. I mean, literally, it was a 15-second conversation. And they
something
were
something had been built up.
And... Oh. And I think that's how it is so often.
Yes.
And the truth is, when we say no and establish boundaries, and Greg makes this point, Dr. Henry Cloud makes this point in boundaries, that when we establish a boundary, people don't respect us less, they respect us more.
It's true. I mean, even if they have an initial disappointment, first of all, it's not the end of the world if somebody's a little disappointed.
I mean, right.
I mean, it's a good life skill to learn. I mean, I as an adult and having so many children, I want my kids to learn how to deal with disappointment. I mean, it really is part of life. And so part of maturity is allowing people to be disappointed. But like you said, most times, even if there is an initial disappointment, it ends up more, you know, turning into respect.
Well, and think about this, too. You know, it's inevitable that you're going to disappoint somebody. You just better choose the people you're going to disappoint, because if you don't disappoint the people that are asking you to do something for a committee or whatever, you might disappoint your family because you're never there. So choose your disappointments well, or you might get to the end of your life having disappointed yourself, living with regrets because you didn't choose to pursue your art or to let that thing inside of you be given expression.
So back to the book and the three steps that Greg gives us in living as an essentialist. The first is to explore. The second is to eliminate. These are getting increasingly more challenging. And the third step, it's really where we find the freedom that we're looking for, kind of this new life, this joy or release of living with less. Okay. And that's the execution, which execution can really kind of stop us up because we have to actually follow through on what we've chosen to eliminate. But he says to remove the obstacle and make the execution effortless. That's his goal, is to kind of set us up to a place where when it comes time to execute that it's effortless. Do you find that it's hard to actually follow through on what you know you need to eliminate?
Yeah, I think that's the biggest challenge of life. I mean, it's the very definition of discipline. Andy Andrews defines discipline like this: making yourself do something you really don't want to do to get a result you really want to get. And isn't that true?
Now, that's key. I love that, because what helps us push through in the execution is knowing what's at stake and having a vision for what could be.
Yes. And that keeps you going, because if you're not connected to that larger vision, in the moment, you cave and you say yes to something you ought to say no to. But remembering what it is that you're trying to say yes to, and that's the thing we got to remember whenever we're saying no, we're saying yes to something bigger and more significant. And if we can stay connected to that emotionally, then it makes all the difference. It makes it possible to say no.
One of my favorite quotes in the book is this: success can distract us from focusing on the essential things that produce success in the first place.
Yes.
Have you ever found that to be true?
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's easy when you begin to get a little momentum, a little altitude in your success, and then all the opportunities start coming in, and then you start getting away from the fundamentals and the basics and the very things that brought you to that place of success, you begin to neglect.
Yeah, I have a friend that told me once that we all pray for a harvest. We all want a harvest, but when the harvest comes, we forget it's a lot of work.
Yeah,
you
sure
know?
Is.
And so to be in that mindset of, you know, with success comes the additional challenge of making sure
That's right. We're
making better choices of how we, manage or choose within that area of success.
Yeah.
Okay, so just to wrap up here, what would be your greatest takeaway from this book? Because this has been a transformational book for you. So what would be, you know, one or two, three of your top takeaways?
Yeah, I think the biggest takeaway for me is realizing that everything's a trade-off, that this is a zero-sum game, that you just can't continue to add things to your life without hitting your breaking point. So now the way that I'm trying to apply essentialism to my life is that every time I'm invited to do something, I'm asking myself the hard question of what's going to go, what am I going to take out of my packed closet to make room for this new shirt? What's going to be canceled on my calendar so that I can make room for this new thing. And that means probably for me, some hard conversations. I'm going to have to go to somebody and I'm going to say, you know, I'm no longer going to be a part of your board, or I'm no longer going to be working with you on this, whatever it may be. But it's that trade-off concept and just being very connected to that and present to it.
Yeah, you mentioned often the zero-sum game. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
Say yes to something, you have to get rid of something else. So much wisdom there. Once again, today we've been reviewing the book Essentialism, The Disciplined Pursuit of Less by Greg McKeown. It's been fascinating to follow his process for how we can execute our right to choose and to live more efficiently, more healthfully, and enjoy the process a whole lot more. And those three steps, again, were to explore, to eliminate, and to execute. But, you know, really, you need to buy the book. And Michael and I get absolutely nothing from telling you this. We really enjoy it. And that's why we chose to invest an entire episode on that. So you will want to check that out and get more information on that. As well as, if you'd like the show notes for this particular episode, you can head to Michael's website at michaelhyatt.com and search for this episode. And you can see all the show notes there. Also, while you're there, if you have a question that we didn't cover, or if you have a question that's even about any other topic, we would love to hear from you. Go to michaelhyatt.com/question, and you can either leave a voicemail or shoot us an email. We do read through those, and many of them end up showing up here on the show, so we'd love to have you a part of that conversation. If you enjoyed today's episode, perhaps you know somebody you work with or a friend who could benefit from this content, we encourage you to head over to iTunes, where you can share the content with your circles. And also, this is so important, so just take a couple extra seconds. We'd love for you to rate the program. This is a way for us to get this content out to more people that may not be familiar with this program. It makes such a huge difference, and we'd be forever grateful. So take the time to share and rate. And I think that's it, Michael. Do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I've been thinking a lot about David Allen's book, which was also a crucial book for me, you know, Getting Things Done. And I really think the difference between that and this is that Greg talks about getting the right things done. Mm-hmm. So it's not just enough to be productive. You want to be effective. And this book for me has been a difference maker.
It's not just about productivity, it's about effectiveness. I love it. Well, until next time, my friends, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters. On the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I are going to give you some killer questions that you can ask leaders in your everyday life.